So a couple days ago, I told you that Dao Hui was going to give his new teacher, Yun Wu, 9 years to show if he had something to teach or not. And if not, he'd leave. So one day in a lecture to the assembly, Yun Wu said, "Warm breezes come from the south, but in the palace there is a cold draft." Upon hearing these words, Dao Wei's past and future were cut off. Although there was movement, forms were unmanifested. He felt himself sitting in a still, barren place. This phrase, his past and future were cut off. Although there was movement, forms were unmanifested, is a lovely and powerful depiction of a state of mind. It reminds me of Dogen's, "Know that firewood abides in its Dharma position as firewood and has its past and future. Though it has its past and future, it cuts off past and future." Dao Wei doesn't yet know that he has a past and future. He only knows the one side. The side where everything stops, where it all drops, where there is nothing at all. The sun still rises and sets. Da Hui still eats, shits, and sleeps. But he is like a dumb person lost in a dream that has no inside, outside, or in between. This is a dream that points to, but isn't yet, the moon. It is more like the dream of an old woman oversleeping at daybreak, meeting the ancient mirror and seeing clearly a face that is hers, but not yet fully recognizing it. Yun Wu noticed that Dao Hui was stuck somewhere between night and day, stuck between sleep and waking. And he said, "It hasn't been easy, but you've made your way to this great ocean. What a pity if you were now to die and not be able to attain life. Without knowing where you'll fall, just let go of the edge of the cliff. Let yourself do it. After you wake up, you won't be deceived again. You must believe this." Dao Hui continued to walk in his waking sleep for some time. And after about half a year, he approached Yun Wu and said, "I often hear you say to the guests and monks, it's like words without words. It's like a vine held up by a tree. I wonder, dear teacher, what is that?" Yun Wu related a dialogue he had with his old teacher, saying, "I once asked that very question, and my teacher said, it can't be described. It can't be depicted. I then asked, how is it when the tree has fallen and the vine withered? What then? And my old teacher said, see what comes next." At these words, Dao Hui had realization, and he woke from his dream to the great dream of the Buddha, and he said, "I understand." If you can describe it, you're missing it. If you can depict it, you're not on the correct path. But what happens when you can't describe or depict it? When the tree has fallen down and the vine has withered? How about when a crow is perched on a withered branch on an autumn evening? What then? How about when there is only Mu doing Mu? How about when the sounds fill you? Or when the numbers count you? What then? Hu Zu said, see what comes next. Eiken Roshi said, trust. And I say, be diligent. Let's all of us together see what comes next. And then let's see through the one who sees. So the following is an excerpt from the sixth letter Da Hui wrote to Vice Minister Zheng. This excerpt is also in J.C. Cleary's Swamp Bland Flowers, titled Returning to Prajna. Da Hui wrote, an ancient master said, as with a fly which can land anywhere, but cannot land on a flame, the human mind can attach to anything, but cannot attach to prajna. Maintaining your original aspiration from one moment to the next, disengage your mind from its usual attachment to the worldly passions and focus it on prajna. Do so, and even if you should fail to break through in the present life, you will at the time of death avoid being drawn into the evil realms by bad karma. To the degree of your aspiration in the present life, you will, when reborn, be naturally possessed of prajna and be ready to utilize it. This is certain, and you need not have any doubt about it. Sometimes, even after this many hours of Zazen, we are still familiar with this old saying attributed to Bajang. We flit like flies and land on many unmeaningful thoughts, sensations, and feelings, and make stories about them. We attach importance to what are not different than clouds moving across the sky. We build structures and identities with these stories and begin to live there. Notice that when you do this, you cannot hear the sounds of the world. By identifying with your thoughts, feelings, and sensations, you have disengaged with the world, and that world that is continually calling to you, the world that is available for you and yearning for your return. There is an old tale that tells of a princess's lover who was not allowed to the palace because of his non-royal status. He, however, stayed nearby calling to her continuously so that she'd know he was close, not physically, but in heart and spirit. The world, too, is just like that lover. It is in love with us and wants to break through our attachments, our habits, and our tightly held notions of separation and substantiality. It wants us to allow it to come closer and closer yet. And it doesn't need us to change. It doesn't need us to be richer or poorer. It doesn't need us to be wiser or less so. And it doesn't care if we're male, female, gay, hetero, bi, or trans. It doesn't ask us to do anything other than to be available, to allow her to come nearer and nearer yet. Baizhang said, as with a fly which can land anywhere, but cannot land on a flame, The human mind can attach to anything, but cannot attach to prajna. I think this quote taken out of context by Dao Hui means, or Dao Wei means, do not attach to random, ordinary stuff. Please attach to prajna. But I'd say it's better too to not attach to even prajna, because when we do, we are depicting it as what it isn't, a thing that too would flit like a fly. In fact, prajna is always right here. You don't need to attach to it. It is sitting in this moment on your cushion, and at nights it sleeps in your bed. And when you go outside, it wears your shoes. Later in the letter, Dao Hui wrote, our understanding of things relating to the realm of living beings is something we have acquired and developed over immeasurable time. So even without study, we possess it from the start. We naturally draw on this inherent understanding, meeting with it everywhere as a source of our choices in everyday life. All of this must be discarded, and I would add, at least temporarily. One way to discard or see through our seemingly inherent thinking styles and behavior is to completely join in with whatever you are doing. When chopping, chop. When cooking, cook. When doing breakfast dishes, scrub. There is no need at all for idle chatter inside or out. Just let go into each activity and let that thing guide you. At this point of session, you are less and less necessary. Let the schedule teach you. Let the activity teach you. Let mu teach you, just as the flowers learn from the sun, and the geese from the wind, and the frogs from the shadows. You do not have to do this all by yourself. Each is here to teach and to point and to present the bare fact of reality. Just pay attention and see what comes next. Sometimes, however, our bodies and minds have been activated by something out of sight, and fully joining in with each activity, with mu or with who hears, seems impossible. Then, as Dao Hui writes, maintain your original aspiration from one moment to the next. Disengage your mind from its usual attachments and focus it on prajna. Most of us came to this practice because of some pain or suffering, whether personal, universal, or existential. We imagined in one way or another this practice would give relief or meaning or purpose to that angst, anguish, or ill-being. So if you're caught and not able to come to mu, not able to fully settle into each activity, then at the beginning of each period of zazen, remember what brought you here. Remember what you hoped and prayed for at your beginning time of practice, and sit down with that. Put your mind on that and that alone for a breath or two or three. And then take a last deep breath and let it go and put your focused mind on prajna, which means put your entire mind and body on mu, on counting, or on breath. And at this time, do not judge your practice, which makes it into an object, makes it into something outside ourselves. When we objectify, we immediately begin to control, shape, and distance ourselves from it. Objectifying makes things separate and substantial and plays into our preconceived notions, which we learned almost before we were conscious. Just trust, be diligent, and see what comes next. This attitude of openness will allow the practice to work on you in the fashion and time of its choosing, not yours. Do so, Dahui writes, and even if you should fail to break through in this life, you will, at the time of death, avoid being drawn into the dark paths of evil karma. To the degree of your aspiration in the present, you will, when faced with the end of your life, be naturally possessed of prajna, and you'll be ready to utilize it. So this is a very optimistic statement, isn't it? And on the surface, it is a quite simple statement. Because you keep your mind on prajna in the present, which is always right here and now, when you are sick, when you are dying, or for that matter, in any situation, you will naturally do what you've already been doing, staying right here with this, and then with this, and this. Yet he says, if we don't practice thoroughly in each moment, the dark paths of ignorance will beckon, and it will be harder to resist. If we do not find ways to be with and see through our anxiety and fears and contracted ways of being when we're relatively healthy, how much more difficult that might be when we are feeble and sick. Of course, because I want to die a good death is not a reason to practice. Our focus need be on living a good life and keeping an eye on prajna, thus allowing us, as the opportunities present, to save all beings. As I said the other day, we can flip around our anxiety, our fear, and our discontentment, and realize those as harbingers or tidings, as Dahui calls them, from the last days of our lives. In this way of practicing and living, we can use any sense of unease as an ally to remind us to return to this, right here. In that way, no thought, feeling, or sensation is a problem. Each is a titan, a friend, reminding us to come back from whatever dark or lost path we'd wandered onto. That way of living allows the darkness or lostness to drop away, so that all we have is the path that we are walking, which is neither lost or dark, correct or incorrect, good or bad. The path is simply my life, and each thing on that path is the exact thing we need to help us keep our eye on prajna. Each thing on your path is a bodhisattva, presenting the very fact itself. Of course, we do not know where the path is leading us, but fortunately, we can leave that to the path. As long as we keep our eyes, hearts, and hands open, it won't lead us astray. So I wanted to back up here a second and say something about prajna. It is usually translated as wisdom, and all of us don't have it, but are it. And not only are we it, it is perfect within and without us. Just as a fish cannot avoid water, we cannot avoid prajna. But unfortunately, just like a fish, because he is so immersed in water that he doesn't notice it, we don't so easily touch what is always touching us. This is why Yun Wu said, "It hasn't been easy, but you've made your way to this great ocean. Now, without knowing where you'll fall, just let go of the edge of the cliff." It is in this complete letting go, this type of death, which allows us to see for the very first time what we already are, unencumbered, free, and filled with prajna. The other day, Nils, when talking about the sutra dedications, referenced one of Eiken Roshi's first teachers in Japan, Hanya Genpo Roshi, and he also talked about one of his Dharma heirs, also one of Eiken Roshi's teachers, Mita Soen Roshi. The word Hanya and Hanya Genpo, which we are familiar with when we say the great Prajna Paramita Sutra in Sino-Japanese, Maka Hanya Haramita Shingyo, is prajna, or wisdom. The wooden stick that sits on a windowsill in the Dokusan room, with kind of an archaic carving, was done by Mita Soen Roshi and given to Eiken Roshi. The carving into the wood is Hanya, his teacher's name, and that which in this moment is listening with your ears. So there is no way to avoid it, but you need to let go of whatever you are holding to taste it. The Buddha said sentient beings are upside down. They lose themselves and pursue things. If you allow each thing on your path, if you allow each thing in your life to be what it is, prajna, you'll never wander too far astray. A little while ago, I was talking to a neighbor about his vigorous, bold, and very lively 5-year-old stallion. I asked him how he handled the big guy while staying safe, because stallions can be quite challenging, ornery, and bossy. He said, "I give him a lot of room to move in the field, so he never has a reason to challenge the fences. And that seems to keep him relaxed and at ease when I'm around him, because he doesn't have that closed-in feeling." If we are too restrained in our zazen, if we keep ourselves and others contained with our fences, the outcome is rather obvious. The farmer was naturally humane in his approach. He had no reason for twitching the horse, breaking him, or taming him. He worked with the horse as a horse, not attempting to make the horse into something else. This creating space and allowing each thing and each event to be what it is leads us to a more human and a more compassionate style of being. We naturally drop the controlling tendencies, the contracted style of being, when we keep our eye on prajna, which is another way of saying when we allow what comes next to come next. Also, in this way of practicing and of living, we do not have to fear the arising of thought, feeling, or sensations. In our zazen, we can welcome whatever arises as prajna, reminding us to come back. And if at some point nothing arises, that too is prajna. So I wanted to stop here and just in closing read you something from the Flower Garland Sutra. It's a text we studied a few years ago at Mountain Lamp. We spent a month with it. And a text that Dao Wei quotes from quite liberally. It says, "All bodhisattvas enter in every moment the samadhi of the prajna of all things. Yet even in that entering, they do not then retreat from the path. They do not forsake activities. And they do not renounce the mind of great kindness and compassion. They do not abandon their vow to liberate sentient and insentient beings. And they do not stop turning the wheel of the Dharma. So please, bodhisattvas, all of you sitting here, continue to see through what comes next."